Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Nathan, I have an idea.
Yeah.
You know that the best on-road cars are off-road cars?
Yeah, actually, you know what? I kind of know that. But you have to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about why we think that the best on-roaders are actually off-roaders. And I think I've got some pretty good examples that will prove my point.
I would agree with many of them right off the bat. So in this broadcast, we're going to be talking about many of you guys actually get like an upgraded version of various soft-roaders and off-roaders that are even beefier and more capable than the rough. But it turns out that many of them tend to have a very good ride on the road.
So, but before I do that, let me tell you a story about a video that we recently did, and that is we compared two Mustang GTs. So, as you recall, we own a Ford Mustang GT, the base model.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then Ford this week lent us a performance model, the premium model with the performance package. And so we thought, you know what? Let's take it to the drag strip and let's see which of these two is quicker. Now, there is a difference between them, and that is one of them is manual. That would be the performance package.
Yeah.
And one of them is automatic, and that would be our Mustang. And there's a $12,000 difference between them.
In addition to the fact that the one that Ford gave us, the performance package, has wider, stickier tires and has more downforce and a lot more kit.
Yeah, and better suspension.
Brakes.
Better brakes, yeah. So let me take you back to February of this year. And as you recall, last year we had a 2014 Mustang GT, and we did a lot of drag racing with it.
That was a really good car.
That was a good car, yeah, yeah. I found that from a single owner, this old dude who had upgraded the new one. Well, in February, I was driving back from the airport, and I had to stop at the Ford dealership for some reason, and they had all of these Mustangs lined up. And now keep in mind, February in Colorado is not the best time to buy a performance car.
It is cold and often snowy.
Especially rear-wheel drive performance car with 486 horsepower.
Right.
So I go in, and I'm like, hey, you know, what's the deal with these Mustangs? And the manager says, you know, I ordered them in the summer, but Ford being Ford, they delivered them in the winter. Mm-hmm. And so if you want one, I'll make you a deal on it. And so the base model, which was blue, was automatic and was $48,000, and he gave us $5,000 off. And he gave us a good deal on the trade. I think he gave us like $22,000 on the trade on the 2014.
That is actually really good.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we got this new GT for $42,000, and then we took it to the track when the snow melted. And we got a lot of comments from people saying you bought the wrong car. First of all, you should have gotten the manual, and secondly, you got the wrong rear end ratio, and we had a 315 on that, which is more of a fuel economy given.
A little bit more, yeah. Right? And it works.
Yeah, yeah. So a funny thing happened, Nathan, when we took them to the drag strip. And keep in mind that the performance model, which, what color was it? I forgot what color that thing
kind
was.
Kind of a gray.
It was like a battleship gray, yeah. That also had a 315. So now we're 315 versus 315. Also had a sports exhaust or performance exhaust, so it gives you that, I think it's 6 more horsepower, so they both had identical horsepower out of the 5-liter Coyote. And which one do you think won by a long way?
The automatic.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, and so all those comments that, you know, you don't know how to drive and you got the wrong one, we read our comments, and you know, a lot of them are, well, shall we say, not kind.
No, some of them are rude. They talk about us and some others. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where an awful lot of people who are commenting about and making those comments are saying things like, well, you should have gotten the dark horse or whatever. Yeah, right.
So let's talk about this.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the High Road ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. High Road makes it easy, and we like easy.
And because this is part of a wider picture of automatic versus manual. So here's the thing. The axle ratio, the rear axle ratio, right? Mm-hmm. When you have 10-speed automatic, doesn't really matter. Because the variable ratios between the axle ratio and the 10 regular gears is so wide that it can emulate whatever, you know, let's say you have a 373, right? It does the same thing because you've got 10 speeds.
Well, it'll get there.
It'll get there, yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and we've known this a long time, but I think it goes against like most of guys' idea of, you know, how good of a driver they are. Manuals are just much slower than automatics. And you know, once upon a time when we were kids, right, the manual was the way to go. Yeah. If you wanted better fuel economy, if you wanted better performance.
Usually a cheaper car, too.
Because like you know, C5, we had 3-speed automatic, right? This is not.
That was no bueno.
That's no bueno.
Yeah.
But that flipped maybe 20 years ago.
Roughly. Eventually, what they figured out is that if you get an automatic transmission, you can make them lighter. Oh, another thing about manuals was where they were lighter transmissions for a long time. But these newer transmissions that have come along are far more efficient, far lighter, far more capable. In many cases, they can be pretty durable. They can be. And yes, when you have multiple gear ratios, one of the many things that happens as you're driving is that the amount of time between gear shifts is far, far less in an automatic transmission vehicle. But to put all that to bed, rather than going into the, you know, in top gear ratios, any of that stuff, it's very simple. If you look at a majority of the people who are racing today, Formula One, Rally, basically any real racing that we see, a majority of those super fast racers, well, yeah, they're not using manual transmissions anymore. They're using a form of automatic transmission or a dual clutch transmission, many of which basically can snap off those gears. Manual transmission, where you're pushing your clutch in order to engage into a gear, releasing the clutch and then going, yeah, not many sports vehicles are using that to go fast. But very important thing, Roman, before you go any further, Manual transmission is still better.
All right, let me keep going before we get there. Then something else also happened, right? Because So over time, obviously we went from 3 gears to 4 gears to 5 gears, now to 10 gears. But the other problem that automatics had was that they were slow, right? So you would have to engage first gear, then disengage first gear, engage second gear. And this is not very technical, but it's basically what happens, engage third gear. And so then dual clutch transmissions came along. And basically, if you're going from first to second, second's already engaged. So like our Porsche has a PDK, which is a dual clutch transmission.
Right.
And there's very little time between changing gears.
It snaps off from one to the other. And in addition, it's also a very light component. It's a far less moving parts in a dual clutch than a regular automatic transmission.
But technology has also moved on, and Tommy made this point, and I think he's right, that the new automatics actually shift gears really quickly.
Yeah, they do.
Not quite as fast as a dual clutch, but almost. So you don't have that little bit of, you still have that little bit of hesitation when you're drag racing, when you switch gears, but it's nothing like it used to be where you could actually noticeably see the car slow down, then speed up, and then slow down, speed up, as it's accelerating because the gears are changing.
In other words, the much more efficient devices that work better using better materials, frankly, in many cases, especially for performance vehicles. Now, with all that being said, I'm going to just simply say it straight out. As great as automatic transmissions are in a lot of performance vehicles, if you want to be connected to the car and enjoy yourself, and you're not drag racing, which not everybody does all the time, I say a manual transmission is still the way to go for many people, including me.
So I would have agreed with you last week until I drove that Mustang home. And what I found myself doing was just shifting automatically. Like I wasn't actually enjoying the process of shifting. I was doing it it had, you know, I've been doing it for my whole life, so it just became second nature. Mm. But I was, you know, before I would have said, well, you know, I've become engaged with the car, so manually shifting it, you know, creates this man and machine synthesis that you don't get with an automatic. But right. I was driving home and I was just shifting it. And I wasn't even aware that I was shifting it. And at the end of the day, I thought to myself, I'd rather be in an automatic. I would rather be in an automatic because this shifting thing, and the problem is, and we're gonna talk about this when we talk about on-roaders and off-roaders, right? Mm. The problem comes in that for the most part, when you drive a car, you're not doing the thing you think you're buying it for, right? So when you buy a Mustang, you've got this image of, you know, either you going to the drag strip or on a Sunday afternoon or going in the canyon. And really, for the most part, when you drive a car, you're driving errands or you're driving to work or you're driving, you know what I mean? And in those moments in time, actually, the manual is worse because it takes more work, especially in stop-and-go traffic. Oh, my God, there's nothing worse than – I'll give you an example of that, dude. I got lucky, and Porsche flew me down to Atlanta to drive the new 911 GTS, right? And they had two. They had one with the PDK, and then they had the one with the manual. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's 7-speed, way too many gears. Don't like that 7th gear. That's a me thing. That's not a but Porsche.
This is all a me thing, by the way, but keep going.
No, this is especially a me thing. So I drove the PDK north of Atlanta up into the mountains. Mm-hmm. And was really enjoying it. And then I jumped into we swapped cars and I jumped into the manual and we were carving canyons and I was really, really enjoying that. I was like, oh, this makes a lot more sense. It was slower. I found myself in the wrong gear. And, you know, that is because of my driving skill. Mm-hmm. Even having said that, I think even race car drivers will find themselves occasionally in the wrong gear. But then I had mid-afternoon Atlanta traffic and for like an hour and a half, I was freaking miserable. And that's when I kind of started thinking about the fact that, you know what, why are people buying a car for something that they do like 10% of the time versus for something that they do 90% of the time? So now you've got like four things going on, right? You've got automatics are quicker, mm-hmm. right? Automatics are more fuel efficient. Easier. Automatics are easier. And let's talk about off-road. I never want to drive a manual off-road anymore. You like manuals off-road?
Yep.
Oh, they're miserable off-road. Automatics
okay. Now
are much better in traffic.
All right. Now, you've had a long period of time to talk. And I'm going to
go for it. Your turn.
Take your Geritol and relax.
I'm going to drink my water and let
you go. So, folks, for those of you out there who are already either changing the station or throwing, you know, a book at it, here's an important point. Roman, do you smoke cigars?
No.
I do. Roman, do you like black coffee?
No.
I do. Roman, when you have an opportunity to drive a really fast car, do you prefer automatic PDK type thing or do you prefer a manual?
Automatic.
Okay, there it goes. There are different choices for different people who have different tastes. As such, a lot of the people who are listening and or viewing probably agree with you. However, an awful lot of them, I'm willing to bet, go, you know what? There is nothing like the feeling of a manual transmission. Look, I grew up in Los Angeles. I've driven manuals through traffic for decades, and it does suck. I agree. But the reward sometimes comes, for those of you who live in Southern California, going through Topanga Canyon or up PCH or certain places at the right time, when you really get a chance to feel a manual transmission do its thing. Off-road, now there are an awful lot of people who, if it's geared correctly, love to put an off-road vehicle into first gear, drop it down, let it do its job. It's harder. It's more challenging. I guarantee you, most of you guys who don't know how to off-road, much better idea to be in an automatic transmission than it is to be driving a manual transmission. That's just a fact. However, there is some reward to driving a manual transmission vehicle off-road, especially for those of you guys who like to go through dunes and whatnot and really shoot it. I got to tell you, it's a hoot to do that with manual transmission. Now, let's go a little bit further. A lot of the older vehicles that are out there, many of you guys are still attached to. My old Suzuki Samurai, I desperately miss. That vehicle was a lot of fun with a manual. I could not imagine how absolutely horrible it would be with an automatic transmission.
That's a good point. I agree. When I was growing up, cars were underpowered.
Yeah.
And that goes back to the point that automatics were slower than manuals. Mm-hmm. But now cars have oodles of horsepower. There's no, I can't think of, except maybe for like, I don't know, a Mirage, right?
Which they're discontinuing in the United States.
Yeah, what car is even barely underpowered anymore?
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
But you're right. You're right. Look, what I'm also hearing you say, and I get this a lot, but now that I'm of a certain age, I don't care, and that is peer pressure, right? There's a lot of machismo out there. You know, car and driver does the thing.
Well, I am
save the manuals, right? It's like, what, a man, you know, has a big stick in his hand and he shifts it and he shifts it.
And it's rewarding
it's
feeling.
It's like Fast and Furious, right?
It's better forms of masturbation, for crying out loud.
Have you watched Have you watched Fast and Furious?
Oh, my God. Here we go. Yeah.
They make a 10-second race into a 3-minute race, and I've never seen somebody actually win a race by downshifting while they're accelerating.
I know, seriously. They've already gone through 5 or 6 gears, and now they're at, like, 8.
What I mean. There's just, like, machismo around it.
Sure, because it is macho, and it's awesome. And women and men love it. And I know that for a fact, because my wife absolutely adores her Mini Cooper, which has a manual transmission. The past 4 cars she's had have had manuals, which she's demanded on having, because she likes to drive it, because it's fun. Because sometimes she'll shift with the music and grind a gear. Because sometimes she'll downshift with the music and grind a gear. Or sometimes she'll go around a corner, hit something really, really hard, and grind a gear. She loves it. But the most important thing, Roman, and many of our audience members may agree with you, is the fact that modern automatic transmissions, and really a majority of them are automatics or CVTs in this case, they all are better than they used to be. They're using better materials. They're using better manufacturing. As such, they tend to be lighter, a little bit more reliable in most cases, and frankly, more efficient. And that's what it all boils down to, efficiency. Now, when you have a Ford Mustang, yes, with the automatic transmission, you guys got amazing efficiency. But I will take the manual transmission every single solitary time. I don't care if I lose my left leg. I have to find a peg leg to shift it. I will find a way to do it because I love it. I love the feeling. It makes me feel good. I'm macho. We all know that, and I'm awesome. We all know that, too. The argument's already solved.
Yeah, none of that is true.
What, with me?
None of that.
Hell yeah, macho! God!
You're so macho.
All my testosterone went away from my head and went to the rest of me.
Yeah, let me repeat that in front of your wife. Or why don't you repeat that in front of your wife?
She doesn't watch any of these, thank God.
Let's see how that goes. Look,
But she really does love her manual
transmission. So last year we had a Miata, which is kind of the quintessential car for a manual.
It's a wonderful little car.
Right, we had an NC2, which is a perfect year for the Miata. Especially if you're tall, because it's the biggest of them all. Mm. And I drove it from the mountains down to Boulder, and I took the back way basically through Central City. Mm-hmm. And I had a really great time because that shifter is so sweet.
It's probably one of the best ones currently
Yeah, really short shifts. And what it allows you to do is keep that power in the best part of the engine band, right?
The power
band,
yeah.
Yeah, that thing goes, I don't know, I think it was like 7,500 or something redline, which is
you can really crank them, yeah.
Right, and that's what a manual allowed you to do back in the day. Now, that Porsche we have, all you do is hit sport, and that car is between 4 and whatever it is, 7,000, just automatically, mm-hmm. right? It does what I was doing manually automatically, which then allows you to actually concentrate on hitting the apex versus worrying. And I know it's more macho to be able to heel-toe it, and, you know, hit the apex and be in the right gear. But I'm way past being more macho anymore because, first of all, I will never be a great race car driver. I've come to realize that. Mm. So now when you realize that, when you have that epiphany, it's like, well, why am I trying to be a great race car driver when I'm struggling with this thing or when at best I'm going to
this
only...
This is a personal issue. This is not something that suffers from.
No. Yeah. Everybody out there thinks they're you know...
It's not ED. It's DD, driving deficit.
Right? Everybody out there, let's face it, everybody out there thinks they're Max Verstappen. They do. They just do. And they're not. We're not.
For those of you who don't watch Formula One, he's a very fast driver.
This is what, you know, maturity means. And so then you realize that you're comfortable in your own skin and you want what you want.
Yes.
And you know why you want it.
Yes.
And other people don't tell you what you want because they say it's better.
Right.
Because you know what's better because you've done what the other people have said.
Yes.
And you've compared it
your
to...
Your epiphany is absolutely perfect. With one exception.
Yes.
With one exception.
Yes.
That's you. Not everybody else. So
I would argue I am in the majority because
Yeah, you probably are.
Yeah, because, you know, the take rate on manuals is now something below 6%.
It's actually bounced up a little bit, surprisingly. It was as low as 4.5%, then it bounced up to 6.
And then the other argument you could make, if this were you, you would say, well, if you want a classic car, the manuals, of course, carry a premium, which is absolutely true.
Yes.
But that's because classic cars sucked as automatics. Right, they had really crappy automatics that you
remind
wouldn't want to drive.
Do we have an automatic in one of our classic cars?
We got rid of all of our Corvettes.
That's right.
And then we had the C6 was manual.
That was pleasurable too.
No, it was a crap manual.
Yeah,
don't get a C6 manual. First of all,
you replace the manual with a better one.
It's notchy and it's heavy, and the clutch. That's another thing. When the clutch is heavy and it's like a leg workout working the clutch. Right. That's
you're a cross athlete. Why are you even bitching about that? That should be something you're into.
No.
Left leg strong.
No, but anyway, so I could be biased because we bought the C6 with the manual because we wanted a manual because we went from the C5 automatic, and we took it to the drag strip and we immediately blew the transmission. Just like that.
And that was a lot. It was at $7,000?
$3,000.
$3,000.
$3,500 to replace it. And ever since then, my like of Corvette manuals has really gone. And I don't think you can get a manual anymore. Can you in a Corvette?
No.
Right.
No, they're only automatic transmissions, and they're extraordinarily fast.
Yeah.
And they're really well done, and they're terribly sad. A little tiny cheer comes out every time I sit in the Corvette and look at it and go, "Oh, no more manual."
I don't think you can get a manual. The new 992.2. That's only automatic.
There's only a couple Porsches that are available with manual transmissions. There are no Lamborghinis, no Ferraris, no Lotus, no nothing. Actually, there might be one final Lotus that I think might have a manual, which like 9 people will buy.
The Elise, if they still make the Elise?
No, not the Elise. It's whatever it is. It's the one leading up to the new SUV and the electric car. The point is that yes,
Amira.
I don't know. Yeah, Emira.
Amira. Amira is the new one. Yeah. Anyway, I think that is because that's a Toyota powertrain. I think that they.
But the previous one had a little V6 with a Toyota and a manual.
Well, we know it's an E.
Yeah. LCAT, LCAR. So here's the deal. Agree with you with many of that and a lot of the components of that. And a lot of people out there are probably better off in an automatic vehicle because they tend to be much more efficient, and in many cases they can be more...
Well, and the other thing that's happened over the years, right, the cool cars have gone from being manual to being automatic.
Bologna.
No. Well, Ferrari, Lamborghini, Porsche, they're all automatic.
Yeah, but
they're
not cool. That's why they're not cool.
No, they're still cool.
No, they're not. That means that any brat in Beverly Hills is going, I can drive one of these. Look at me. I'm hot. Look at me. A lot of videos of myself. But you put one of them in a manual transmission car, they're going to blow the clutch, or they're going to screw up. They won't know what they're doing. Or they're going to go to a Cars and Donuts thing, and then they're going to burn out and then slam into the crowd like many of them do because they don't know how to drive a manual transmission. I completely disagree with you. Many of those automatic cars are so boring bourgeois.
Let me rephrase, and I think you'll agree. When I was growing up, the boring-ass cars, Delta 88s, Ford
Model
LTDs,
A's.
no, Capris, all this crap, right? Think about all these, like, New Yorkers, Chrysler, right? The K cars, these were all automatic. And the cool-ass cars, Porsches, and by the way, Porsche built a really crappy automatic. It was like it was like a clutchless. Volkswagen did the same thing.
Yeah,
right?
Anyway, some weird stuff.
We're kind of going off on a tangent here.
Yes,
but
we are.
All the cool cars were manual. Today, all the cool cars are automatic.
No. Nope.
Yes, they are. Nope. Name me one cool car that isn't automatic.
Yes.
One. Give me one.
Mustang. The Mustang is really cool, and you can get it with a manual. The Jeep Wrangler is really cool, and you can get it in a manual. The Ford Bronco is really cool, and you can get it in a manual.
How long?
What do you mean, how long is it? It's just
how,
like
how long can you get
inches.
Manual?
Oh, how long will that last?
Yeah,
it's not going to last very long.
Exactly.
Yeah. But look, I'm a realist, and I'm also very honest about stuff like that.
Give it 5 years.
Yeah, but you know what? They still build them, and they still sell about between 80,000 and 100,000 of these vehicles a year if you combine them. And I have done that because Mini builds, I believe, 2 or 3 models. They're iffy whether or not they're going back to a manual with one of their other cars. You know who builds the most manual transmission cars?
What?
Honda. Honda still builds the most, and then next to them is Mazda. Basically, just 2 cars.
You know, it's also
3
goofy. This is also another. We should do this. You know what we should do? We should do this episode. We shouldn't be calling it on-roaders that are good off-road. We should be calling it like automotive fiction. I'll give you another one of those. Okay, automotive fiction. Right? Where the consensus of opinion is wrong. So Type R, right? Only comes in a manual,
mm-hmm.
right? Civic Type R.
What's amazing.
What's the shifter made of?
It's got like a metal ball.
Yeah, it's billet steel. Have you ever tried like getting a hold of that thing in the summer?
Oh gosh, no, please. Yes, I know. I know it gets hot.
Not just gets hot. I mean, it becomes like you can iron with that.
That's thing. What you get leather. You get leather to put on top of it, and suddenly it has a condom.
Well, actually, you can because the Acura version of that
has the leather.
Has leather.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the things.
And those two cars are an awful lot of fun to drive. They're crazy fun to drive.
And speaking of, like, let's stay with shifting, right?
Yes.
You know what else sucks? Those gated manuals. Those are also
horrible and awesome at the same time.
It's all this stuff that like makes it, you know, hair chested in people's opinions that makes it cool. But in practicality, they're just horrible to drive. Because if you're racing, right, and you happen to miss it by 2 millimeters, all of a sudden you're going to miss the gear because instead of hitting the little notch, you're going to hit the little part that sticks
out. That just means you suck. See?
See, there you go.
That means they were better back then. That means drivers were better back then. I challenge you guys to tell me that there are better drivers today than Senna. Come on.
Saying drivers are better today. Ah. And I'm not saying the technology doesn't make driving easier, which I believe it does. Like some of those like Nigel Mansell era Formula One guys, they were just living on the edge.
Nigel's a badass.
I know they were like the stuff they were doing.
Black belt.
A modern driver would be like, I don't think so.
Yeah,
but that ain't me.
yeah, that is. There's some wonderful history out there with these guys who would live on the edge and really live on the edge. But things have changed. Let's forget about the race car drivers because that's not real.
And real is a regular driver. And let me be real about that too. I still admire those guys and I admire modern people who also have that sort of like, you know, and let's face it, a lot of race car drivers are a little crazy. The ones that we've known, there's a little bit of like, they think differently than we do. Like the thing... I'll give you an example. We talked about this at the morning meeting, right? Paul mm-hmm. Girard, who is our race car driver. I was talking with him, right?
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy.
I love Paul, and I worry about him, but
we all do.
Every year, he gets some like sketchy car. He's going to race up Pikes Peak, which is happening this weekend.
Well, sketchy is not fair to say. It's just that they're one-off.
Well, this is what Paul was telling me. He was telling me that oftentimes, you know, the cars are designed more by. I mean, there's pros who design race cars and who know how to set up a suspension, who know how to set up a chassis
right.
for a race car. And then there's like, you know, people who, you know, I know how to add, you know, put on a supercharger. I know how to put on bigger brakes. But that doesn't necessarily make it a race car. That just makes it much more powerful and potentially stop quicker. But that doesn't mean, you know.
It could be far more dangerous
it could
as
be,
well.
Yeah, yeah.
And also perhaps not as reliable. Paul has, over the years, raced a variety of different vehicles, often posting really good times if they manage to stay in one piece.
Didn't one year the car catch on fire and one year like a wheel fell off?
He's gone through it, but he has no fear about that.
That's
he's
what
just
I mean.
Like basically like, yeah, bring it on. Let's get a birdcage together, throw some wheels on the end of it and put a jet engine on the back. I'll race it, you know.
Yeah, and me and you, I should say me, I don't want to speak for you. Hmm. You know, if I had the cojones to drive a 9/9 or 10/10 up Pikes Peak, right? And let's tell them what Pikes Peak is. So it's the second oldest race in America.
108 years old now.
Yeah, it starts at the bottom, and basically you're full out all the way to the top of the mountain, and if you make a mistake, you're going blue, right? Like those old movies where the car goes over the edge.
Dozens of people have died just within cars, and that's not even counting motorcycles.
Cycles, yeah.
14,000 feet plus
the
top.
So if I were Paul and I actually was in that race, and you know, one of the wheels fell off, or the car. The next year, I'd be like, "No, guys, I'm going to take a pass on this."
Yeah.
But Paul's like 100%. Like, let's go do it. We're gonna, you know, we're gonna win our category or our
division, whatever you want,
right? Whatever you call it, yeah. And that's what I mean. Race car drivers have this like special ability.
Paul is a former Stig, if you guys were curious.
On Top Gear, USA, yeah.
So
yeah, to like put that side of their brain aside that says this may hurt or you may die. Somehow they can kind of just move that aside and go for it. And I respect that a lot, but it's a skill set I don't have.
Yeah, and sadly we lost a friend of ours who was a race car driver,
Justin Wilson. Yeah.
Another one who had absolutely no fear whatsoever. And sadly, that's one of the things that can happen to race car drivers. It's a hard lesson to learn. So rather than go into that whole thing, I'm going to say this, that these guys all probably would agree that, you know, automatic transmission for a variety and for a majority
of those
people,
cars are automatic.
The ones going up the hill?
Yeah.
No, an awful lot of them are manual. A ton of them are manual because a lot of them, first of all, they have a whole division that's based on classic cars. So those are all manual. Then they've got a lot of the guys who are racing essentially, you know, purpose-built hill climbers. And a lot of those are still dealing with the older manual transmissions. The reason why is because they have to remain in gear in some cases to really get that supercharger to spool up. A lot easier to do when you have a manual transmission. I've seen them personally. So the modern cars, though, that are going up the hill, those are the dual clutch and the PDKs and whatever, and also electric cars that are going up there at incredible rates.
So before we get to off-roaders, let's transition slowly from automatics and manuals to a little bit of off-roading, and that is, and this is a truck thing, but since Andre has already recorded the truck podcast, I'm going to talk about what we did this week that I was really proud of, and that is we went to a tractor pull.
Yes, you guys did, and I was really impressed. First of all, they dedicated their weekend to doing it. Often a lot of the guys at TFL, specifically Roman and Andre, like to do these things over the weekend because we just don't have enough time during the week to shoot some of these things. And so they sacrificed their Saturday. They went to a meet in the middle of nowhere. Brush, wasn't it?
No, it was Pass Brush. It was in Sterling, Colorado, which is like 2 hours east of Denver. And the idea was that we would compare. We did a video where we compared the Cybertruck to our Ram 2500 Cummins to see how far each one could tow and then to see how much energy or money.
In a tractor pull.
No, this is the first video I'm talking about.
Oh, the first one, okay.
To see how far they could pull and how much money it cost to pull
a
trailer that far. So we got identical trailers. Then we thought, well, let's continue the series and see which of these two vehicles is actually better at towing and what better way to test that than to go to a tractor pull. And we knew nothing about it. I watched it as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the term full pull. Apparently, every time you do a pull, it's not called a pull, it's a hook, because that's the hook that you put on the hitch. So I learned that. But anyway, we called the people who organize this, which I think is a northern, it's like Colorado Tractor Pulling Association. And I forget that wrong, please forgive me. Great people, family-run event. And they were doing one in, like I said, Sterling on Saturday night. So we said, yeah, no problem, we'll drive out there. And could we do the, please, you know, tractor pull, in this case a truck pull, before anybody gets there? Because I had this idea that we were going to kind of like, you know, have a bunch of different pulls, because it seems like it's pretty straightforward, right? Mm-hmm. You pull this sled as far as you can, and then the sled backs up, and then you do it again. I thought different camera angles, will be great. We'll get there before the crowd. Well, that didn't happen, Nathan.
No,
it didn't. We each got one pull, and we were somehow we became the, like the exhibition demonstrator, like the warm-up act for the main event.
Yes, and universally hated at that.
Yeah, people were yelling at us. The reason Andre was driving the Cybertruck and I was driving the Cummins is in the first video we did the same thing. So we were kind of locked into our trucks.
Yeah.
We get there, super nice people, and I had no clue as to how much is involved in pulling a sled. So first thing that was shocking, which was also a little worrisome, was the sled itself, specially designed.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is this giant, like it's like a trailer that you would pull behind a semi, and it's got this sliding big metal box on it. And then underneath it, it's got a big, like,
plow?
It's not a plow. It's like a big box. And then underneath the box, there are these V-shaped teeth.
Teeth, that's it.
Yeah, and as you go down the track, and a full pull is 300 feet, right, the box moves down the sled, which pushes on the teeth, which then dig into the ground,
right,
making it much harder to pull. And then they could put more weight on it depending on the class. And there are different classes, and they're based on two things. So you get a weigh-in, so they're based – it's like tug-of-war. If you ever see a tug-of-war video, it's all about, like, which vehicle weighs the most.
And also traction.
Yeah, but mainly it's about the vehicle weight, right? So it's the categories are based on weight and cubic displacement,
mm-hmm,
right? So if you're – If you got a small block, you're in a different category than if you're in a big block.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
And once upon a time, there were a couple of these. I think it was all about actual tractors pulling the sled. There were some tractors that were like these specially built monsters that had like wheels the size of you and me.
Yeah, they're alcohol fed and all that.
Yeah, all these cars are like either methanol, alcohol, or diesel, right? And they had like two 350 strapped to where, you know, the engines would be.
Right.
But for the most part, most of the vehicles now are trucks. And interestingly, they're specially built just for the towing.
Mm-hmm.
So just like dragsters, they don't like drive one to Starbucks and then go tractor pull. No, this is, they trailer them there. They have a chassis that's built specifically to have a hitch that a hook attaches to. And it's a real hook, right? It's a giant hook. And they put out like anywhere between, let's say on the low end, they had some farm malls actually.
Mm-hmm.
These old school tractors used to do 50 horsepower that are now putting like 500, but the trucks are putting anywhere from like 500 to 2,000 horsepower.
Okay.
Right. And then The sled itself, just the sled, weighs 33,000 pounds.
Okay.
And, you know, the Cybertruck is rated to tow, I think, 11.
Yeah.
And I want to say the Cummins is rated to tow 14. So immediately, you know, I was a little worried because, like, what happens when you hook up 33,000 pounds, which is triple, basically, of what the Cybertruck can tow?
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to cause issues with the, you know, with the suspension? And then I had no clue. So I was driving Cummins, and I had no clue, like, what the best way to do this. You do it in two-wheel drive. I assume it's four-wheel drive. Do you do it in four high, four low, right? It's all about torque. Do you lock it into a gear? Do you air down? And all of that you do, which I found out only afterwards.
Right.
But then with the Cybertruck, it got even more complicated because with the new off-road screen, there's like 25 different modes you could put it in. So you could put it in like Baja mode, which frees up wheel spin, which I thought was something we wanted. And then there's a little slider, and you can say, I want 40% of the traction or torque to go to the front, or 50 to go to the, you know, 50-50 or 80 to go to the rear. So where do you set that? There's just a lot of different options.
Yeah, there certainly are.
And then because there's a certain height restriction on how high the hook has to be in the hitch, we had to jack the Cybertruck all the way to its highest settings.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put 33,000 pounds on it. I'm like, am I going to blow an airbag? And then some of the comments were hilarious. They're like, you don't even know how to turn the traction control off. And I'm like, dude, I had never done this. I don't even know, you know, like what the proper and best setting is. This is not something like I had spent my whole life doing. Oh, yeah, we fine-tuned it. Nathan, after 15 years of pulling sleds, we know exactly. You know, I mean, come on, guys, give us a break.
Yeah.
But the funniest part was people hated the Cybertruck.
Yeah, they did. They were saying nasty things to the
like
guys.
Like, go back to California. You know.
It was a funny irony in that one, too.
Yeah, in the comments, it was like, maybe Texas, because that's where it was built.
Yeah, that's true. So one good thing about this video, well, actually many good things. First of all, this is I really enjoyed the amount of work the guys put in there, because there was only one shot at this for both of them. Both Roman and Andre did do a good job, but they also got a very good interview, probably from a far more eloquent person than I anticipated, talking about the actual sled.
Yeah, Kyle, who runs the sled.
Yeah, but he was like, I expected someone to say, you know, you're going to put that Knuter valve in the back there and then have something with it popping up and then you're going to have an explosion and whatever. No, he was actually like very detailed and he knew exactly what he was talking about. He was easy to follow, especially for an idiot like me. And I thought this was a really, really good interview. And it was unexpected. I don't think you guys expected to have
somebody who
was just like, so these guys were great over there.
Well, we also didn't know like this was just like drag race. This is. What's the Drag Racing Association, NHRA?
So NHRA.
So it's NHRA sanctioned. So everybody else was wearing, and I think we got away with not having helmets and like fireproof suits because we were an exhibition. We weren't really competing. But like Nicole, who owns it, right, she had a truck that she was running. And I saw her, and when she first got there, she had like open-toed sandals. And then she put on race shoes, and then she had a whole, you know what I mean, the race outfit and then the helmet. And I thought to myself, oh, yeah, if you're putting out running, you know, methanol, you're putting out 1,000 horsepower, you know, bad things happen. And indeed, bad things did happen. There was a guy who like completely blew his drive shaft. It went flying. You know, and they're like, you got to be careful. Don't stand too close to these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, that's common. A lot of the transmissions would give out and things would happen.
Half shafts go, U-joints go. It's serious racing.
Yes. Now, I know you don't like to say, you know, you can learn the rest by watching the video instead of giving it all away. But I really do think that you guys should watch the video.
Yeah,
because
I didn't say who pulled farther.
Yeah. Then that, I think, is worth watching on the video. I really do. The fact that they were able to pull this together and really do it just one time in, out, and done was pretty impressive. So I do recommend watching the video, which is at altfl.com. And did it go to TFL Offroad or did it go to
truck? It's on truck.
It's on TFL truck. Okay.
Yeah, and thank you, Nicole, and the rest of the people there. They were super nice to us. And at first, they were kind of giving us like weird looks. We bought the Cybertruck, but by the end of it, they were really cool.
Yeah.
And
I think they understood that we were there just simply to show what this thing could do or what it couldn't do.
Right, exactly, yeah. And in the end, nothing broke, nobody got hurt, and that's what matters. All right, so shall we spend the last half hour talking about
why? Half hour? 10 minutes, maybe.
So number one, I'll give you a couple of reasons, but let me start with number one.
Now, okay? Let's explain exactly what you're talking about, because we got to come back.
All right, so what we're talking about is, whether it's a truck, or since this is a car podcast car, I think that off-road cars are much better to drive on-road than on-road cars. And I'll start with one of the biggest reasons, and I've just seen this three times now, and that is ride comfort, all right? So off-roaders have suspension, obviously, that's set up for going across bumps and holes and divots and washboard, blah, blah, blah. But more importantly, Nathan, they have a lot of tire, right, versus the new cars now that are on road. So we have a GB80 right now in the parking lot. I think that thing's rolling on 22s. And the sidewall literally on that tire, I want to say, is maybe an inch and a half.
Yeah, so, and that is part of it, is has to do with the depth of the tire and the amount of motion that goes through it can be cushioned and diluted, so that way you don't feel it as much inside the cockpit.
Because look, the more sidewall you have, let's say you're rolling on an 18 or 19-inch wheel, right? You maybe have 4 or 5 inches of sidewall. And so the very first thing that, of course, absorbs the bumps and makes the ride comfortable is the sidewall, the tire. And when you're rolling on 22s or 23, there is no sidewall. And that has just become epidemic throughout the entire industry.
Agreed, including some off-road vehicles that are sporting massive wheels. There's a lot of other things. Now, may I go and talk for half an hour?
No, you can't. Go for it.
Okay, so one of the things that happens with a lot of on-road style vehicles, be it an SUV or crossover, is that they have much larger wheels now, like Roman was talking about, right? And these larger wheels, that's more mass that you're actually turning with the vehicle. And that mass, you're not doing yourself any favor, really, by doing that. Honestly, with a smaller wheel that was made out of like steel or aluminum, you probably would have a better performing vehicle. But more importantly, if you were to condense that massive unnecessary wheel all the way down to what you need, let's say 17-inch wheel, suddenly you can have between 4 and 6 inches of rubber, and with that you have better ride height for off-roading. But also, as you're bouncing around, you have a much better ride on certain surfaces. Now, here is the trade-off. The minute you go for an off-road vehicle, you are sacrificing cornering ability, which may be no big deal for regular people who are just like driving daily. But if you go around a regular corner and you're going really fast and you pull it real hard and you think you're driving a Honda Civic and yet you're driving a Jeep Wrangler, you could be in a little bit of trouble because it is extremely top heavy and that's how things tend to work. Second thing is the suspension that Roman was talking about earlier. Suspension systems, modern suspension systems, are remarkably capable. There's like DSSV, which is basically what they use in Formula One that General Motors is using on their off-road vehicles. And it's a spool valve setup, completely automatic. It does its own thing, and you can use it on multiple surfaces. But it does provide a decent ride on almost every surface that you're on. And you don't get that in your regular car.
So I was just in the new Infiniti, the new big, you know, the Happy Hippo.
Yeah. But it's no longer a hippo, you say?
It's no longer. It's much more modern. What's I can't think of the
QX80?
Yeah, QX80. Thanks. Yeah. Oh God, alphanumeric has gotten out of control. Anyway, one of the things, and I've heard this for so many years, right? And this is another reason I think off-roaders are better on-road. What they'll tell you is that it has these shocks that adjust 1,000 times a second, Nathan, for the road condition. So,
sure.
Right? So it's adjusting the shock. And yet, anytime I've ever gotten in one of these vehicles that has these shocks, and I don't know, can you even adjust 1,000? This is what they said, 1,000 times a second. Can you even adjust 1,000 times a second?
Sure.
Can you?
Sure.
Really? Is it physically? Anyway, let's just go with it, right? But seat in my pants, I can't tell the difference. Whether you put it in sport, whether you put it in normal, whether you put it in eco, whatever, you know, maybe it's adjusting 500 times a second or 50, I don't know. It all feels the same to me. With an off-roader, and a lot of off-roaders now have active suspension.
Yeah, or just fully adjustable suspension.
Let's talk about it. Like, so the new Toyota TRD Pro.
Our Ranger Raptor.
Yeah. Our Ranger Raptor has it. And you pick, like, you can pick a Baja mode or rock crawl mode. And it actually feels very different, whether you're on-road or off-road. I mean, it does stuff. And I think that is also good on-road. So if you want a wallowy ride, you can put it into, like, Baja mode, right, where the vehicle is designed to kind of give you a lot of floatiness when you're crossing the desert very quickly, right? If you want button-down ride, like you were talking about going around a corner, you put it in sport, and all of a sudden those active shocks, you know, firm up. And do a much better job of keeping the center of gravity controlled versus very high, which off-roaders tend to do. So the second point I want to make is that off-road suspension actually, in my seat-of-the-pants experience, does stuff, whereas on-road suspension never does anything except for make you feel like you're switching different modes, which at the end do very little. So you end up leaving it in whatever is the default mode.
Early days when I was just starting to do this job, so let's go about two decades, I was driving a Corvette, and it had this, what they would call a magnetic suspension. Essentially, it's a bunch of goo.
Megaride, right?
Yeah, and it's a bunch of goo inside of a container in the shock, and what happens is when you send an electrical charge through there, it hardens, and then when you take the charge out, it softens. And it really worked. It changed the entire character of the vehicle. This is going back a couple generations with the Corvette. And they started using that, I believe, in Cadillacs and other vehicles around. And then the technology has moved to...
So the way that worked, if I was there for an explanation, yeah. Right? Imagine like you have a bunch of pencils, and the pencils are kind of floating around. And then you firm it up, and all of a sudden the pencils go from floating around to being all in the same direction.
Yeah.
Right? So the particles line up. That allows the viscosity of the fluid in there to be more viscous versus less viscous when, like, the pencils are, you know, not like, straight up and down all in a line but kind of floating around.
Yeah, so electrical charge makes it, you know. Okay, anyway, so going back to this. But in that time, in the past two decades, they've also made leaps and bounds in hydraulic suspension systems and being able to keep them cool for serious off-road running. That's why you have those reservoirs, by the way, in many cases. And on top of that, making them multi-adjustable. And then they've also gone the extra step of making air suspensions better and better and better. Now, older air suspensions I hated because basically you would stand on your tiptoes when you lifted something and you had no articulation and you had a really crappy ride no matter what you did. Now, things have changed. And as much as I hate it, because you guys know I do not like the Cybertruck, I will give it this. It has one of the best, it is the best riding Tesla, period. You can put it in a mode where it's basically a magic carpet. And in addition, it's probably one of the best riding somewhat off-road vehicles I've driven as well. It is remarkably smooth and you just feel nothing. And that is all attributed to its air suspension setup. So that is leaps and bounds ahead of where we were. As such, you look at other vehicles that have air suspension, certain Rovers and whatnot, they are improving as well. As such, they are becoming better for all-around driving for smoothness. Once again, that does not include the capability of driving them around a corner really hard and doing a sports car thing, because many of those vehicles that we're talking about that have the big tires and whatnot, honestly, no matter what you do, if you lower it, it doesn't matter what you've done to the suspension. At the end of the day, if you have off-road tires and you're trying to perform on-road, they don't work as well. Different type of traction, different profile, different height, different type of pressure, completely different type of compounds used. So yeah, you're obviously not going to have that. But for regular drivers out there, Roman is absolutely right. Off-road bias vehicles, the off-road proper suspensions in many cases are way more comfortable to drive daily.
Okay, and then first of all, I wish I could agree with you, but I think that the technology has gotten better, but actually air suspension tuning has gotten worse.
Really?
Yeah, I think Tommy's LR3 is kind of the state of the art. That car is a magic carpet in terms of how it goes across
the road. You think it rides better than the Tesla?
I do, yeah.
I thought the Tesla was really smooth.
I think the new air suspensions are tuned very poorly. I know Rivian had, with the newest, because the thing that the Rivian R1S and R1T got dinged for was that air suspension, but the ride was really bad.
Yeah.
And the problem with air suspension, and I'm not nowhere near a suspension engineer, but it's hard to get like the rebound, it's hard to get the damping right, so you end up with a car that can hop, you end up with a car that like wallows, and it's hard to get that right. And I think, like I said, the state of the art for some reason was back in Tommy's LR3 days when like Land Rover had it dialed in. Today, most of the air suspensions that I experience, and maybe it could be, Nathan, because the cars are riding on such, you know, low-profile tires. Because a lot of them are rolling on 22s or like the new...
Even 20s.
24s for the new Suburban,
I want to say. Crying out loud.
The new Escalade, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. But let's talk about something you brought up, which I think is absolutely interesting, and that is tires. The other thing, the reason that I think that off-roaders are better on-road, and this is a wear thing, I just somehow... And we've put on a lot of, you know, all-terrain tires on our vehicles, mm-hmm. but they wear better than street tires. I'm not saying they're better around a corner, which they're not, but they seem to have a lot more longevity. In general, truck tires, in my experience with the trucks we've had, will easily last 30,000 miles, maybe even as much as 40 or 50,000 miles. Some reason, high-performance car tires, if you're lucky to get 25,000 miles out of them, maybe even 20.
That's a simple explanation there, though, because the compounds were what you want is a sticky tire when you're and a very soft tire, softer compound.
Yeah.
When you have a race car or a high performance car, and
those, how about just a straight off season? Even those don't last that long.
Yeah, but they're not built to. They don't have the lug depth that they do on an off road vehicle.
Point. They don't have lug
and
depth.
Lug depth means that you have longer wear, which tends to be, if you look at the like lifetime warranty on these tires, you'll see that performance or even all season, but still for performance car tires, are nowhere near that of these aftermarket, you know, BFGs, Goodyears, whatnot. They tend to have a much longer shelf life and driving life, unless, of course, you don't know how to rotate your tires and that's your own damn fault.
Yes, true that. And then the other part of that equation is all terrains that tend to come on off-roaders tend to be much better all year round. So if you live in a place like Colorado where you get snow, all seasons that come on a regular picnic, you know,
they're not great here.
They're horrible in the snow.
Some of them are even worse. It depends on the tire.
They're horrible, you know, in sand, of course. I don't know about what, you know, performance, but in general, in my experience, all-terrain tires that come on most off-roaders are just a much better tire to drive all year round. With a car like my wife, I have to switch out the snow tires in the winter. Mm-hmm. I just do because she just doesn't feel comfortable or safe with, you know, all seasons on her car. So, and it's a pain in the butt, but I do it because it's, you know, it's safe and it's, you know, the most important person in my life. So of course I want to keep her safe.
I would say you get what you pay for often with tires.
Yeah.
Because there's some
there's some
great looking tires that look like they're really beefy and and they're just crap. And you know, I've seen people in tires that look like they're way beefier than the all terrains I had on my car, and they're stuck in the snow and they're stuck everywhere.
And some all terrains are very loud too.
Yes, it's the other thing is that you're gonna have noise, and also you will definitely suffer in terms of efficiency.
Mm.
They're not made for efficiency. Part of the reason why is because there's extra the amount of drag that you're dealing with those big tires. And also the amount of rotational mass that's going through. Once again, it's inefficient. They're just not built for efficiency like a regular tire would with the car that you a regular car. You know, it's just how it is. So yes, I do agree with Roman. Many off-road bias vehicles, both crossovers, SUVs, trucks, they tend to have a much better ride on regular roads than just the average version of those vehicles.
Now, let's touch another point. This is something you brought up, which is absolutely true about the center of gravity, but off-roaders tend to be lifted to some extent, right?
More often than not, yes.
Right, so they're taller. We can talk about Subaru, right, the Wilderness version of the...
Those cars have good rides, by the way. I haven't driven in the new Forester, but the previous Forester, I thought
Forester,
had an excellent ride.
Outback and Crosstrek right there. I want to say they're like an inch taller, maybe.
An inch and a half, I think.
An inch and a half tall. And that has benefits from a lot of different points of view. First and foremost, if you're tall, they're kind of the right height for me where I don't have to, like, it's not, you know, like the worst cars to get in and out of are very low-slung sports cars.
Agreed.
But, you know, an off-roader, I just kind of, and I've got a weird body, so I've got a tall torso but short legs. But with a car like that, I just put my butt in the seat, and it's exactly at the right height. I don't have to, you know, get out of it.
Well, that's one of the reasons why crossovers are the biggest sellers right now, period, other than pickup trucks, because you can move your butt over and basically scooch you into the seat comfortably.
Yeah, the Crown.
People are sick and tired of falling into a car or having to climb up to a car.
The Crown Insignia, same thing right there.
Exactly.
Just these tall station wagons. But in general, the other benefit you get is that now in a world where 25% of all vehicles in Texas are pickup trucks, if you're in an off-roader, you can at least see over people because they are taller, and you know the rare sedan that's in front of you, you can actually see over, which gives you a sense of kind of being, you know, king of the road, right? It's much more commanding driving position.
The commanding driving position is why a lot of people did move over to crossovers and SUVs going back to the late 80s. And now it's just it's part of the deal. But there's an additional thing you should keep in mind too, which is it actually, for me at least, and I think for some of you, a little bit easier to park a vehicle you're sitting a little higher in. We just did a video where I was driving the Toyota's Prius Prime, a vehicle I like, by the way. It's just amazing. Not the easiest vehicle to park. Just it's low and it's hard to see out of. But you get into just a regular crossover at SUV a lot easier, at least for a guy like me to park. So I'm curious about whether or not you guys have the same type of problem or if you think it's a benefit.
And then, once again, you know, it depends if you like luxury or not. But to me, off-roaders are also more easy to live with because they tend to have, like, plastic instead of carpets, or they have like, you know, deep plastic rubber floor mats. They tend to have more hard wearing materials. Mm-hmm. And so just as a person, you know, who eats McDonald's in their car or whatever your fast food is, I tend to get ketchup and crap all over things and French fries fall. And I just feel like an off-roader does better with that than an on-roader because the materials tend to be more lifestyle-y, so they tend to be more wearable.
And easier to wash out and whatnot. Yeah, they're, and what they'll do is they'll market it as like, you know, well, you're going across the you know, Serengeti and everything else. You have blood on your arm after being eaten partially by a lion. It's easy to wash that off of your interior. You know what? Here's a really interesting thing. So recently I drove the Bronco Sport. It's a great little off-roader. If you get the full-on off-road version of that, the Bronco Sport, it really can go quite a few places that a lot of crossovers can't. It sits a little bit higher. The ride isn't too bad. It's still zippy. And I drove just recently its brother, which is the Ford Escape. Yep. And the Ford Escape is really more of a station wagon by comparison. It's a little larger in some ways, but it doesn't feel at all off-roady. And frankly speaking, you're right about the materials. The materials inside of the Escape, I would hazard, you know, I didn't want to get them dirty. I don't want that lion to chew my arm off and get blood all over the interior of that one. I'd much prefer to have the Bronco Sport. And they're related. They have the same or a very similar platform and a lot of the same components. But at the end of the day, I think that nowadays, I think it's really been about 30 years that automakers seen that there's a desire for people to at least feel like they can go off-road are making vehicles more off-roady, and it's becoming more and more real. So even Subaru, which at one point did not have a very good off-road suspension, their suspensions are far better now. Back in the day, they didn't have a very good underbody protection, much better now. So everybody's improving and making their cars better, and we benefit because, aside from pricing, we get a much better ride out of a lot of these cars.
All right, and let me answer the elephant in the room.
Yes, I'm right here.
No, and this is why I thought of this topic. So recently, Lamborghini and Porsche built two off-road cars,
yes.
Right? 911 Dakar, Lamborghini Strato.
Strato,
yeah. Strato. And they've got off-road tires, they've got... they're lifted, right?
Yeah, they got armor, too.
Yeah, and by the way, this is something that's pretty funny, Nathan. You don't know this, but I requested both Lamborghini and Porsche to borrow their cars because now we have this bureau in Moab, and I thought it'd be great. We weren't going to do any rock climbing, right?
Yeah,
we were going to go into Hell's Revenge with the car.
Some desert running, right?
Yeah, there's like Onion Creek, so I thought we could do this really, because I haven't seen any off-road reviews. I've seen a lot of on-road reviews with these cars, but never. So Lamborghini got back to me, and they said, we do not allow... journalists to take this car off-road. And I thought to myself, that's like building STO and not allowing you to take it on the track, okay? So, you know, it kind of takes some of the street or off-road cred away from the car.
It's like building a boat and saying, yeah, you can't go into the ocean.
Exactly. It's kind of funny. All and right. I get that, you know, some of our fellow automotive journalists don't do a lot of off-roading, and they may take it a bit too far, Nathan.
I know they have, actually, in the past. It's a known quantity.
And then Porsche came back to me, and they said kind of the same thing. Not that they don't allow it, but that they said, you know what, when we first launched the Dakar, and this is true, actually, we published a bunch of B-roll of us like driving up a mountain or something in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that B-roll. It looks really good.
Yeah.
But then, you know, my comeback to that would be, and when it got stuck, did you put that up there as well, right? I mean, at some point, that's what we do, right? When we actually test it off-road, that's our job to make sure that... But irregardless of that fact, any reviews you read about those two cars, right? And these are typical hardcore automotive journalists, not off-road guys. They'll say that they are the best versions of those cars, period. Best. Better than a GT3 if you're a 911 fan. Better than a GT3 RS because they are the most livable, right? They're the ones that you can like use as a daily driver. And let's go farther than that. Because they have more suspension, you're not worried about them, right? So like you don't have to have a lift on the nose.
Just to go over speed
bumps. Just to go to, you know, like Starbucks. And because the tires aren't as grippy, they're actually more frolicky, right? They're more frisky.
Yeah.
And they're more fun to drive on road because they're just more lively than a hardcore GT3 RS or a Huracan or whatever you want to compare it to.
You know what's curious? There's other car companies that I think are hearing that as well. So they're kind of going the rally stage version of these vehicles.
WRC.
You know who else is doing that? Ford.
Ooh, yeah, with their new Mach-E Rally,
right? Which I haven't driven yet.
Perfect ski car. Dude.
Yeah, that's what people have been saying exactly that. And, you know, one thing about the Mach-E I didn't like is that the ride I always thought was a little too stiff. So I'm hearing that it's a much better ride. So once again, it could be that the off-road treatment is the right way to go. if you're not going on a track day on asphalt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, I think we've made a pretty good argument as to why, if you want the most comfortable, the most practical, the most fun, and the most drivable on-road vehicle, find yourself an off-road vehicle.
That's right, with a manual transmission. I came back around.
You had to stick that in there, didn't you?
I've been sitting on that all day.
Are there what off-roaders have? There's none that have a
manual. Jeep Wrangler.
That's okay. Hold on. I'm going to exclude two of those. Right.
Uh-huh.
The problem is when you become like that hardcore off-road, then there are issues on-road. So with the Jeep, of course, it's steering.
Yeah,
you know,
but the Ford Bronco's okay on the street.
The Ford Bronco's better, but. At some point, what you need to be really good off-road does not help you on-road. And some of the things I've heard about, like the new Rivian, is they designed it to be so good off-road that they're having trouble with it on-road. I don't believe that because I haven't seen that with like a Land Rover, right, with the Defender.
Yeah, but the Rivian needs a manual transmission.
But the Ineos is pretty bad on-road. I mean, the steering has
not the best centering vehicle, I'll be honest with you, yeah.
But yes. But in general, we're not talking about the super, you know.
I'm talking about just vehicles that are, believe it or not, somewhat affordable.
Like you said, the Bronco Sport.
Yeah.
Like, we have a picture of the Renegade up here.
The Renegade is just a really good little car. I mean, it's well used, the one that we have. So it's a little rattly. But if you were to buy a relatively new one of these things and you got the Trailhawk version of it, I would wager it rides better in traffic, in general driving, than the regular version of that. Although the regular version may be a little bit quicker because it's less weight to haul around, but that's probably
And this is a good thing that we forgot. We haven't discussed what cars we're talking about, so let's just do a quick list.
Sure.
So I would say any Jeep that the Trailhawk version. So that could be a Grand Cherokee. That could be any of the what else is left. That's
Wagoneer, Grand Cherokee, any Compass.
Yeah, any of them that are trail rated tend to be better on road as well, I think.
Comfortable on road, yes.
I also believe that the Defender or any of the Land Rovers that are off roady, even the Discovery, the latest version of that.
Yeah, I drove a Defender with the steel suspension in it, and it really didn't have a whole lot of kit to it. I thought it rode really nice. I finally got to drive a 90, which I've been trying to drive for years.
And then the most recent ones that I've driven that are also really good on road, the best example is perhaps the new Land Cruiser. Incredible off road, and with the supple suspension, incredible off road as well.
Yeah, on road was what you meant. You said off road.
Yeah, off
road. What he meant off-road to say is that on road and off road, it's nice
really
riding.
Good, yeah, no head
and
bob.
I agree.
No head bob. We haven't driven the new Forerunner, but I suspect that will also be on that list.
They have similar underpinnings. I mean, quite frankly, very similar.
Yeah, in the Lexus lineup, the GX. And actually, this is super true for the GX. There's two versions of it, right? There's the regular one, the on-road one, which actually rides horribly. Once again, this giant wheel problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the Overtrail, completely sorts that out.
Everybody loves the Overtrail, and for damn good reason. But it's also not – it's going to be – good luck finding one.
Yeah, yeah. I think the same is true for the LX, right, which is the Land Cruiser everywhere else.
Yeah.
So pretty much pick any off-roader and then compare it to its like more on-road worthy version, and the off-road one will be the much better pick when you're going on-road. That's right. G-Wagon, that's another one. I'm trying to think of like more affordable ones.
Well, yeah, G-Wagon, there you go.
No. Besides the G-Wagon, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, if you were to look at anything from perhaps Mazda, instead of looking at the CX-3, you look at, or so the 3, which is now the CX-30. CX-30 has a little bit more of an off-roady version of it. It rides better. CX-50, same thing, rides a little bit better. Usually larger tires tend to help, and a lot of these automakers are doing that. Subaru, almost every single one of their vehicles has sort of an off-roady version of it.
And same thing with like the Passport, the Trail Sport.
The Trail Sport, yeah. And also the Rock Creek version of the Nissan Pathfinder, I think rides very well. It has other issues, but frankly speaking, I think the ride is excellent on it.
Yeah, and then the same thing goes for trucks.
Yes.
Yeah, I tend to think that like a Rebel is better than the regular version of that.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Right.
Usually, once again, you know, higher end suspension systems that are built for off-roading tend to be a little bit softer and a little bit more comfortable.
You know, in 4X better than non-4X,
yeah.
Pro 4X better than TRD Pro, off-road better than, you know, anyway, if you've been listening to this show, you know
what
we're talking
about. I just
drove
the 2024 GMC Acadia and the AT4 version of it, and it has the off-road suspension, And it's just for that one. There's no other Acadians that have that. And it was a way better riding vehicle than its brother, which was more of the well, the Denali.
I would go an exception here, an outlier. You can go too far with that. So you just took this vehicle off road, which was the new AT4X with the Bison edition.
Yes,
with the AEV parts on it that comes on 35s.
Yeah, it's a $69,000 midsize pickup truck.
Well, yeah, the Canyon. Yeah,
yeah.
It's too off-roady. On road, I think it's almost like a little too wallowy.
We fixed it.
What would you get a flat tire? Would you?
No. we aired down before we went off road, and when we got it onto the road, other than being able to not stay in this in one lane, it was very comfortable.
On 35s, it's too like.
I thought it was great.
It's too tall. That truck is so tall. Oh my God. Yeah, that one is even too tall for me.
Yeah, but once you air down, it's not too tall for me.
You can't air down on the road.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, hey, you were saying.
We said about, like, you know, longevity of tires is going to go right out the window.
That goes out the window when you air down and drive on the highway. But it wasn't at a dangerous level, guys. Don't worry.
Well, guys, let us know what your experience has been, right? Let us know in the comments. We read our comments. Have you found any off-roaders that you love non-road? We'd love to get your take on this.
And how many real men and real women are out there who drive a real manual transmission?
I'm gonna get like flamed in the comments.
You go get them, guys.
Because of the manual thing.
Oh, yeah.
I still love driving manuals. Don't get me wrong. I just think automatics are, for most cases, the better choice.
Okay. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to go to alltfl.com for all our latest and greatest.
And yeah, we'll see you next time. Ciao.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.